Lovely, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, so thank you, Tim. As Tim said, my name's Damien Bevan. My talk is going to be about sending text messages through space. And by space, I sort of mean outer space or inner space, really, in orbit around the Earth from satellites, via satellites. And just to clear up at the very start, it's not the satellites are not sending the messages, but they're relaying the messages. So you might be receiving messages from someone you know at some other part of the world, relayed via the satellite, and you can send messages back to them. And we're most used, of course, with our cell phones, with our smartphones. Our communications are through cell towers. We can see them around us. And this is what we might call a terrestrial network. But satellites, that's a new aspect, non-terrestrial network. And I'll use that term a few times, and you'll see the abbreviation NTN. So that's what that means, non-terrestrial network, or sort of flying cell towers. Okay, so this concept really, well, it hit at least the trade press, and maybe even the mass media, about 18 months ago, about 6 months after the last EMF. There were various announcements about companies doing this. So Apple said that they were going to introduce this functionality into their iPhones, whereby wherever you were on the world, not at the very poles, but many places on the world, you can send emergency messages and receive messages through your iPhone. And then at the same time, the Android camp via Qualcomm, they announced that the same thing would happen in Android, that they were going to partner with Iridium, who is a company I'm going to talk about a bit more, who already have a satellite network to provide the same function on Android phones. And we'll kind of see where that's got to in the meantime. And the sort of service offering we're talking about here, so text messages in either direction, like routine messages, SMS, as we would have known it, at least in the past, and also emergency, SOS. And, you know, as long as the message gets there is with high reliability, within a few minutes, you know, you're likely to be happy. So this is the structure of the presentation, three main sections, an introduction to satellite communications, then I'll talk a bit more detail about the Iridium system in particular, because it's a good example of an existing satellite communication system. And then I'm going to go talking about adding the same functionality to our own 5G smartphones, and this is where this term NTN comes, adding that NTN, non-terrestrial network, D2D, direct to device, direct to the smartphone in your pocket via satellite. So in the first section, so this is SATCOMS 101, this is an introduction to satellite communications. And this is really sort of laws of physics. And there are two different areas here where we need to understand the laws of physics. The laws of physics for satellites, for orbits, that kind of thing, and then the laws of physics for radio, because of course our phone is going to be talking to the nearest satellite using radio. And here's some of the terminology that we see in this business. So hopefully my sort of pointer is visible to you. But in the bottom left, there's us with our device. Often in the trade termed a UE, user equipment, or it could be subscriber equipment or user terminal. Our device with its antenna is talking what in the satellite people call a service link, so the radio link to the satellite. There's an uplink direction we're transmitting, satellite's receiving, and there's a downlink direction, the opposite direction. And the idea for the satellite network is to get your message back down to ground, you know, as soon as possible to this ground station. It might be in the same country or in a neighbouring country, perhaps. And then that will route it then to the cloud, to your mobile core, to the internet, and whatever. So that feeder link might go directly from your nearest satellite, or it may relay it onto another satellite through what's called an inter-satellite link, ISL. And that might be another radio link, or it might be an optical free space laser link. And then it'll get down. And so these satellites can form a sort of a mesh network in space. The term SV here is just what they often use as an abbreviation for satellites, a space vehicle. That just means a satellite. Okay, so satellite orbits. So orbits of satellites, artificial and man-made, around the Earth, in general, they form an elliptical orbit, as I show in the top right here. A special case of elliptical orbit is a circular orbit, and all of these sort of services I'm going to be talking about here involve circular orbits. So the orbits, looking bottom left, orbits can be at different heights. There's the low Earth orbit, which is between about 500 kilometres and 2,000 kilometres up from the surface of the Earth. Next one up, medium Earth orbit. Low Earth orbit is the kind of the main one I'm going to be talking about, and that's what Iridium uses. Medium Earth orbit is between about 2,000 and 20,000 kilometres. For example, GPS navigation uses medium Earth orbit. And then the next one up, it's not called high Earth orbit, it's called geostationary Earth orbit, GEO, and that's at a particular height of 36,000 kilometres. Now, so there's a relationship between how long it takes the satellite to go around the globe and how high it is. And geostationary is at 36,000 kilometres. It's just the right height such that a single circle around the Earth takes exactly 24 hours. And so looking at the bottom right here, there are different types of orbits, different orbital planes, and for the GEO, you'd make it equatorial, or as close to equatorial as you can, so that it's going around the Earth at the same time as the Earth is rotating. And so to a person on the Earth, the satellite looks exactly the same position in the sky, and that's why, you know, satellite television, we can have these dishes fixed pointing at the satellites. The sort of other extreme from that is where the satellite is going from pole to pole in a circle on a polar orbital plane, and the Earth is turning underneath it. And that's very good because the equatorial orbit gives good coverage around the equator, but it's not so good at very high northern and southern latitudes, whereas the polar orbit gives good coverage over the whole pole. But in between, there's also inclined orbits. There's a network called Global Star, which is a bit like a competitor to Iridian, and that has something of an inclined orbit. So it provides good coverage, but not so good at the poles, I believe. Okay, so and as we're standing on the Earth here at the bottom right with our TRX transceiver, our phone, what we perceive is that the satellite passes over us, and the satellite, so I'm talking here particularly about the low Earth orbit, so those satellites are going around the Earth in 90 minutes. Their actual speed works out as about 7 kilometres per second, so they're travelling very quickly. They might pass over us in 10 minutes or less. They might be going directly overhead, or they might be somewhat to the side. And, you know, as I said, typically about 500 kilometres up, and our phone has got to maintain a reliable link to that satellite and then to the next satellite when that satellite has gone over the horizon and is no longer visible. And it's to do that, our phone is using radio. So I'll talk a little bit about the physics of the radio spectrum. So radio is an electromagnetic wave. It's like light is an electromagnetic wave. It involves oscillations of electrical field and magnetic field, which propagate essentially off to infinity through space. It's characterized by the rate of oscillation, which is measured in hertz or megahertz. And so here I'm showing on the figure a sort of a range of different frequencies and relating them to broadcast radio that we might be familiar with. So, for example, around about 1 megahertz, that's the sort of medium wave band. There are still broadcasts on the medium wave band. I believe Radio 5 Live still broadcast on the medium wave in AM broadcast. Short wave band, higher frequencies, say around 10 megahertz or so. That's maybe more familiar to our grandparents, but there are trans broadcasts happening there. And then VHF radio, there's VHFM at around about 100 megahertz, and DAB digital audio at around about 200 megahertz. That's the very high frequency wave band. And then there's a boundary at 300 megahertz, and above that is the UHF ultra high frequency band, and that's typically where our communications with cell towers and satellites is going to be happening. Now, there's a relationship between the frequency of a radio wave and its wavelength, and there's an inverse proportional relationship. And at 300 megahertz, that corresponds to a wavelength of 1 meter. So any higher frequency, the wavelength will be shorter than a meter. So we're talking of wavelengths of the orders of tens of centimeters. And these waves are travelling at the speed of light, but that isn't instantaneous. They do have a finite speed, and it works out as about 300 kilometres in only inverted commas, 1 millisecond, a thousandth of a second. And that, so it might take, for example, about 2 milliseconds for the signal to get to the satellite and another 2 milliseconds to get back. But actually, in terms of radio, in terms of these sorts of systems, a millisecond is actually is a very long time, and you really want to be able to synchronise the arrivals of signals to something like 10 microseconds or less. So that is going to be an issue we'll talk about later. Okay, and I talked about how these electromagnetic waves propagate off to infinity. And in space, there's nothing in the way, essentially, so there's nothing to absorb the waves, so they will keep going. But there is this concept of path loss, and I think most of the audience at DMF will be familiar with this concept, whereby as you move further and further away from a radio transmitter, the signal is going to get weaker and weaker. Now, why is that if there's nothing absorbing the signal? Well, it's because the transmitter, you can think of them as the centre of some sort of sphere, and the signal propagating away, and the sphere is getting bigger and bigger and bigger the further away you move. And all of the energy, the power that that transmitter was transmitting, becomes distributed over a larger and larger sphere. So if you're much further away, the power is much less dense, is much more distributed. It's very, you know, very weak. And you have a receiver that's trying to receive that signal, and essentially what that receiver is trying to do is to absorb the energy, and if the energy is very weak, it's not going to absorb so much. And there's another important point here, which is the amount of energy that an antenna absorbs is related to the square of its size, or of its length, of its dimension. And antennas for higher frequencies and shorter wavelengths are by their nature shorter, and therefore they will absorb less of that energy, and therefore at higher frequencies or shorter wavelengths the signal is going to be much weaker, and so you're going to need to deal with that. So one way to deal with that, so at top right here I'm showing a typical sort of satellite, and it's got an antenna panel there that's looking down at the Earth to communicate with devices, and because of the quite short wavelength, it actually, what it does to get around that is it has lots of these antennas in a whole panel, and it, by combining the signal from them as it receives, or it can actually increase the amount of energy that it receives. And at the same time, what it also does, and considering more if it's in the transmitting direction, it allows it to focus the energy into these, I'm sort of trying to show with my hands really, but these beams pointing down, looking at the Earth. So these beams have better transmission power because they're focusing energy, and there are many of them, so they will correspond to separate cells on the Earth that's moving across the Earth as the satellite moves overhead. So the effect of this is to get you better signal strength and to have separate cells, which can lead to greater capacity. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the Iridium system, which is a whole working satellite communication system. Top right is a typical sort of satellite that's flying in the Iridium system, and the bottom left is a typical sort of handset. They're quite chunky 1990s looking handsets with big antennas. Now that is a system, it was introduced in the late 1990s, the so-called Block 1, the first constellation launch. In the 1990s, technology to do this was a lot more expensive. The cost of launching was a lot more expensive. The system was launched, the investors paid for it, they launched the system. What they hoped to do was attract the mass market that we'd all be buying these phones and using them. Unfortunately, although technically the system worked very well, they didn't get the take-up, and so the company very quickly went into bankruptcy. However, other investors came along, bought the whole constellation on pennies on the dollar, and have been operating it ever since quite successfully, not for the mass market, but for more niche customers, customers who want global coverage and are prepared to pay for it. So government agencies with three-letter acronyms, or military people, or maybe charities, oil exploration, all these different sort of customers. And this system, I will show a picture in the next slide, but there are 66 satellites in all. Originally planned to be 77, which is why they called it Iridium, but in the end they went with 66. There are 6 orbital planes and 11 satellites in each plane. The system has been successful. They've in fact replaced all the satellites in orbit. They launched a next block, the Iridium Next system, and they've deorbited the original satellites, and that's what they have flying now. They offer more than just messaging. They offer voice and data, but we're just going to focus on messaging. So top right here is a picture of the Iridium system. You can see there are 6 orbital planes. So satellites flying up one side of the Earth and down the other, and the Earth turning underneath. And each satellite, the figure there is trying to show the sort of typical coverage, just thousands of kilometres of coverage from a single satellite, from sort of, I think that's Greenland, down to North Africa and across to maybe the Baltic states. So good coverage and lots of separate spot beams, so that gives it a lot more capacity. And the lower figure is again sort of showing the elements of this system. Flying space vehicles, ground stations and such like, and also inter-satellite links between them. It's all very advanced for its time. Now, I won't go into any of the details of the technical details of the radio system, how that works, but it's sort of a 1990s system. There are certain similarities with systems like DECT and GSM, which we're using on the site here. But there are other talks. There is a talk tomorrow morning about Iridium, so there may be more information about the details of that there. So, as I say, most of the customers for this system are sort of wealthy customers, but they have in recent years also been offering more less expensive options purely for messaging. These various devices I show on the right, these messaging devices, and they're sort of like two-way pagers. You can send and receive messages aimed at the sort of wilderness market, yachtspeople, hikers, and they sort of people who are likely to be away from coverage. And these devices, they might cost a few hundred pounds to buy and perhaps tens of pounds every month for your messages. Now, I'm showing one on the bottom right there. So that's actually not Iridium. That uses a different system called Skylo. But that's kind of interesting because it's a similar sort of thing and relatively cheap as well. That device is something like, works out as something like about £100 to buy and about £5 a month for some bundle of messages. And, you know, the obvious thing to do is to say, and this is what engineers would call the Velcro approach, to say, OK, I can just take a messenger, put some Velcro on it, take my smartphone, put some Velcro on that, stick them together, and I've got a device which does satellite. And then as an engineer, you'd start to think, oh, well, they could be in a single case. Maybe they could share their display, they could share their processor, and integrate more and more of that together. And essentially, that's what Apple have done. And as I understand it, if you buy a new Apple iPhone 14 now, that's what it has. It has capability to send and receive messages using the GlobalStar network, and it's sort of done that way. However, for the Android, in fact, the original idea to partner with Qualcomm and Iridium actually dissolved because Iridium is a proprietary system. It's not an open standard, and the vendors of smartphones didn't want to have a proprietary standard in their phone. They decided they wouldn't buy those sorts of chips. So that idea has changed. Iridium have changed the way they pivot. They're going to do it, and Qualcomm too. We'll talk a bit more about how that might work. So now I'm moving on to the third section. I've talked about the Iridium, the proprietary system, but now we're going to talk about, well, how could you put the same functionality into an existing 5G mobile cellular system? And just a reminder of the terms here. 5G, we're probably familiar with what that means, fifth generation terrestrial cellular originally, but we're putting non-terrestrial functionality into the standard for direct-to-device messaging and potentially other features as well. So one of the key issues here, the key problems, one is link budget, which is really just an engineering term for weak signals. The signal, normally we're used to talking to cell towers between, say, 1 and 10 kilometres away, but now we've got these satellites 500 or so kilometres away, the signal's going to be weaker. So we're going to have to deal with that. Also, the actual satellite phone devices, the bespoke ones, tend to use a higher power, maybe 7 watts or something, whereas our phones are more limited in power. Now, you could get around this by giving our phones higher transmit powers, but then that has more issues to do with safety and battery life. So let's say we're going to stick with the same mobile phone power. How are we going to get around this problem? Well, there are ways you can do it. If you're only sending messages, you can perhaps repeat the message, send it very slowly. There are approaches like that. Okay, the next issue is Doppler, and hopefully we're familiar with Doppler, and this is where with a transmitted wave, if either the transmitter or receiver are moving, the perceived frequency of that wave can change. We understand this happening at audio frequencies. If a car moves towards us, the engine pitch is higher as it comes towards us and drops as it moves away. And that same effect manifests itself in radio. As a satellite moves towards us, its carrier frequency is shifted upwards, and then as it passes overhead and moves away, its carrier frequency shifts downwards. And if that problem isn't compensated for, it can be an issue. So I'm trying to illustrate here. Here is a space vehicle, a satellite, moving overhead. To the right, this red user that it's moving towards, and a green user it's moving away from. And the satellite wants both users to be transmitting at the same time. So it says to the red user, I'm trying to show here, this is a power spectral density versus frequency. It's trying to say, use a lower bit of spectrum, red person, use a higher bit of spectrum, green person. But if you haven't compensated for the Doppler, then what happens is that both of those transmissions will shift and actually they can collide, can cause interference to each other. So that's an issue if you don't deal with it that you'd have to think about. There's another one, differential delay. I said that the speed of light is very fast, but in this sort of environment, it's actually not as fast, all that fast. So another way of having two users transmitting at the same time might be to give them different time slots. So the satellite is directing them when to transmit, and it says to the green one, use the odd time slots, the red one, use the even time slots. But unfortunately, the red one is much closer to the satellite, the green one's further away. They have a different concept of absolute time because they're both getting their time from the satellite, and also there's a bigger delay. So if they don't compensate for that, what you'll happen is that the green ones will be delayed and will, again, collide with the red ones, and you can get problems, you can get interference. And then another technical problem that you have, as I said, you've got these cells which are moving rapidly over the ground. You know, terrestrial networks were designed, okay, you might have high-speed vehicles like high-speed trains moving through a set of fixed cell sites, whereas now what we've got are more likely to be fixed users, but the satellite is now moving over at 7 kilometres per second. And what you get is this whole pattern of beams on the ground, each one is a separate cell, so as they sweep across the user, then the user is finding that they're going to have to be handed off very reliably and neatly from beam to beam, and then as the satellite moves away onto the next satellite that follows it and hand off beam to beam, and then maybe even then hand off back to the terrestrial network at some point. So all of that needs to be seamless, even though everything's happening very quickly. Now, in the original thinking of this talk, the timing, I don't think I have a lot of time for solutions, but I realised that in my abstract, I did actually say I'll give solutions. And we can be pretty sure that this system can be made to work. These wilderness pages, they work fine. There's a lot of people in the 5G standards looking at how to make this work. So I'm pretty sure that solutions will be found. And the current preference seems to be to mandate that every handset needs to have GNSS, basically GPS functionality. It can know where it is. And also that it will be sent what's called ephemeris data, which is sort of orbital information about the satellites that will be passing overhead. And therefore, the phone itself can make all the necessary corrections for Doppler and for timing and pre-compensate for those effects. And that seems to be the preferred solution at the moment. And so let's hope that all of these problems can be solved. We will all have the capability with our phones, not just Apple users, but everyone, to be sending and receiving messages via satellites. So the technical problem has been solved, but what about the economic problem? How much would we pay for this? Now, I remember in the 1990s quite happily paying 30p for text messages, and it was when I really needed to send them. It was very useful, and you know, maybe we would pay that sort of money. Maybe we'd pay an extra £5 a month for some sort of bundled text service. Is that going to make the system economic? These low Earth orbit satellites, they typically only have a lifetime of, say, 5 to 10 years. So how many million messages is each satellite going to need to carry in that time to make it pay its way? We'll find out. But investors are investing in systems here, in companies. So I'm just going to name a few of them. This is not a comprehensive list. So there are some startups, AST and Link. They're sort of new startups, pure direct-to-device companies. I understand now that AST already have agreements with both of the main cell phone carriers in the US, so that's looking promising. But also Starlink, Elon Musk's company, who have a whole separate service where they provide broadband service to flat panel terminals. They are also looking at adding this direct-to-device, direct-to-handset feature to their satellites as well. And they have very deep pockets. Elon Musk has very large ambitions, so I wouldn't bet against them. If there is going to be a successful system, that it might be them. And then the other one I'm mentioning here, Skylo, they also, that's an interesting company because they are the ones whose system is used for that cheaper two-way pager I talked about. That's using geostationary satellites. It's using a flavour of the 5G standard, NB-IoT, Internet of Things, Narrowband Internet of Things, flavour of the 5G standard. So that's also looking promising. That functionality is being incorporated into cell phone chips with Qualcomm and MediaTek, such companies. So that's also looking promising. Okay, so just to remind you, the structure of this presentation, the first part I gave you is sort of an introduction to satellite communications, the key principles, the laws of physics there. I then talked about the Iridium system, which is an existing system, technically working very nicely, still a big player in satellite communications and might still have a part to play in satellite to our phones. And then talked about, but the Iridium system is currently a proprietary system. So we're looking at, what about the open standard, the 5G, what's that going to look like? So yeah, just to summarise, so space-based satellite text messaging, it's already out there, it's been there for many years, even for these consumers, these wilderness pages, these two-way pages giving both SMS and SOS type functionality. But there are investors with very deep pockets, Elon Musk and others, now trying to bring that capability into the smartphone in your pocket. We talked about various technical challenges which need to be overcome, but assuming they can be overcome, and it's looking very likely that they can, for the economics, we're going to need to see it rolled out and see how much we're willing to pay, and let's see how well that does. Okay, thank you very much.